Chapter 8. She wakes up feeling exhausted. Not physically, but mentally. As if opening her eyes and facing the world is significantly more than she's capable of handling at any point in the future. But she hauls herself out of bed and to class, focusing on the schoolwork she had put aside since before they went north. She doesn't go to practice again, more because she needs to catch up and less because her head is still hurting. And when she sinks at last into sleep again, it's past 2 in the morning, and she finds Gendry waiting for her at home plate. They play, and he tells her about practice, about Harwin and Merritt and John getting into arguments, about who's gonna pitch the first game of playoffs. Playoffs. The word makes Arya's heart come to a standstill. Playoffs are coming. They had made playoffs. They hadn't necessarily anticipated making playoffs, but they had. And the boys had, too. And the next day, when she stumbles, still exhausted, into the dining hall, she sees that there's an article about it in the school newspaper, about how the baseball team is hosting Old Town on Friday, and the softball team is driving east to Salt Pans. She feels like she barely has time to process it before she's off to Bravosi. And realizing she probably has to reschedule her oral exam until after she's back from Salt Pans, and that she has a 10-page paper to write about the bloody hand that's due the Friday after, when she might have a whole different game to worry about. When she arrives at practice that afternoon, she and Weasel and Rosamund drill as hard as they can with Sirio, while she hears Ravella breaking the team in half so they can play small spars. "Who's pitching the game?" Arya asks Sirio, hanging back to walk with him as Weasel and Rosamund go ahead of her. "Rosamund," he says, "you should rest." She grimaces, but knows he's right. She'd almost thrown her shoulder out against Winterfell, and she didn't much like the idea of having to sit out semis if they made it, because they played quarters. And looking at Sirio's benign smile before she snuck into the locker room, she could tell that they were saving her. Gods, if she pitches semis, her stomach seems to go cold, and she does her best to think of something else. Something else appears in the form of a text message on her phone when she finishes showering. Gendry Waters. "What are you up to after practice? Or does giving space mean radio silence for the moment? We never actually sorted that out." Arya's heart jumps into her throat. She hasn't seen him in person since he hit her on the head with a baseball. But she thinks of her Bravosi paper and her econ problem set and the fact that she's getting on a bus to Salt Pans tomorrow. Arya Stark. "I'm in the library all night, crying about how much work I have to get done before I leave for Salt Pans. I'm not sure. Let's play it by ear."
"What's with the frown?" asks Obella, and Arya's head jerks up as her phone buzzes in her hand. She looks down at the screen.
"Gendry Waters."
"Want a study buddy? Too much?"
I have a lot of work to get done, and someone wants to do stuff tonight."
"Someone?"
Obella asks, raising an eyebrow. "A special someone?" asks Cynthia. "Look, she's blushing. Who are you screwing?"
"I'm not screwing anyone."
"Except when we dream," she thinks, and her stomach twists. "It's Gendry." She begins typing again.
"Arya Stark. I can't. Just not right now, okay?"
"Gendry," Obella teases. "Since when has Gendry been able to make you blush like that?"
"Shut up!" It's not until she's halfway to the library that she gets his response.
"Gendry Waters. All right. Good luck. Talk to you soon."
She hates texting, suddenly. Hates it because she can't tell if she's gone and upset him, or if he thinks she's upset. But asking about it would mean that she wouldn't get anything done tonight, and she needs to not be distracted. Not even by Gendry, and gods, is he distracting. Even when she's not remembering his face between her legs and Really? She had to think of that now? Really? So she tucks her phone away and knows that she'll bring it up later. Shouldn't it be easy, taking space from someone? And yet, suddenly it feels hard. Harder than before when she'd thought Gendry was two people and... Fuck, she really needs to work on her Bravosi paper. She doesn't get home until nearly 4 in the morning. The draft of her paper is atrocious, and she's sure that her problem set is full of errors. But she can't care because she's too tired. And she's glad, so glad, that she's not playing on Friday night. And when she falls into her dream, she only has time to pitch 5 hits to Gendry before he disappears with his alarm and she's alone in the field. She only goes to Econ the next day because she needs to hand in her problem set and wishes desperately that she could just get on the bus and sleep. And her insides twist. It will be the first softball bus ride she's ever taken without Gendry being there with the baseball team. And maybe she wouldn't have noticed before, but she notices now. Isn't she supposed to be relieved by that? It's space. Away from him, time to think and come to terms with the fact that he lied to her for years now. Because it's not space she can necessarily have when she sleeps. But instead, she just feels sad and alone when she boards. To make matters worse, she can't even sit with Weasel or Lyanna, because she's got to edit her Bravosi paper and should probably try her hand at the advanced quantometrics problem set she hadn't had time to start the night before.
You excited? Gendry asks when she pitches to him.
He hits it and sends the ball out of the stadium and runs around her. I'm not playing tomorrow, she says. She sounds tired, even in her dreams. And it's strange, because she's asleep right now. Her body is asleep, but her mind is too overrun with quantometrical differentiations that she can't even think straight. When she looks down at the red lacing on the softball in her hand, it's almost like the laces are graphs that she should be coordinating, and she groans.
What's wrong? Gendry asks.
He sounds hesitant and nervous, as though unsure whether he should even be asking. I have a lot of work right now.
He diverts as he passes third and comes out to the mound. Yeah?
Yeah, like, it's sinking into my brain a bit even now. And it's fine, I'm not pitching tomorrow, but... No, it's not fine, because you're playing no matter if I'm not, and I'm sad I'm missing it.
A crooked smile spreads across his face, and she blushes. He shouldn't smile at her that way. Not while she's still confused. He probably thinks she's not confused right now. He probably thinks she's sorted it out, and she hasn't.
You'd miss it anyway, he points out. It's not like our games don't always overlap. And you missed the one game that you saw me play anyway, because I, you know.
He reaches over at her with a closed fist, and she thinks he's going to wrap her head gently with his knuckles, but rests his fist there, gently, rubbing her head. She smiles and closes her eyes for a moment.
Besides, he says, no offense, but if you're not pitching overhand, your pitches aren't fast enough to be a challenge most of the time. This is just for fun.
Her eyes snap open, and she narrows them. A defensive look crosses his face.
Look, it's not that you're a bad pitcher. You're really good. But I'm used to hitting fastballs that are faster than yours, and it's because you pitch underhand. You've been actually amazingly helpful for me. And I'm the best hitter on the team for a lefty pitcher, but... I should shut up. I'm digging myself into a hole, aren't I?
You still miss my pitches sometimes, she says, annoyed.
Yeah, I do, he agrees.
And she's sure he isn't saying something because he's worried about annoying her further.
Like I said, you're a good pitcher. And I said most of the time, all right? It's not universal. I really need to shut up.
Go to home, she says, and he drops his hand from her head. She hadn't realized he'd left it there, but he had, and he marches back to home,
And when Aria looks at the ball in her hand, the laces look like laces.
And don't you fucking dare go easy on me.
She strikes him out swinging and raises her eyebrows at him, hands on her hips.
I never said you were bad, he says angrily. And I said most of the time.
No, but you think you're a better player than me because you play baseball and I play softball, she snaps. Do you think Kyle's a better pitcher or John or Harwin?
No, I don't, he says.
He trails away.
You just what?
She asks, marching towards him.
I just think I'm a good hitter, all right. I have the most RBIs on the team, and there are recruiters after me to play professionally. I'm good, all right. And I think it's because of you, for what it's worth. Because you and I plan our dreams, and I get better because you're really good. Look, it's more a me thing than a you thing, all right? I also said something stupid without thinking, and it's not what I meant at all.
Well, next time you say something stupid without thinking, try not to be an ass, will you? She says.
He exhales a quick, silent laugh, and the corner of his lips twitch, his eyes softening, and they're so blue, and she's not used to seeing him here, no matter how natural it is. And God knows it's natural. But every time she notices, her stomach twists a little bit. Because how could he not have told her? How could neither of them have told her? Because that was the thing. It wasn't just Gendry. It was her soulmate, too. They'd been separate in her head. They'd been different. And now they are the same. And if one lie is a strike, and God, she hates liars, hates them with every fiber of her being. He'd lied twice over, and so he was at two strikes, and everyone knows that it's three strikes and you're out. She doesn't know if she could bear him striking out. But at the same time, it fits. It fits that he'd be here, that Gendry's in this dream, playing at batting practice with her, with his arms and his ass and that crooked smile. It all fits too well. And when she sees him in his uniform, her stomach goes into knots because, gods, she knew that some girls liked a man in uniform, but she never thought she'd have a thing for a guy in a baseball uniform. Why was it that part of her was so hurt and upset, while another part of her just wanted to jump his bones, unbutton his jersey, and run her hands along his chest? That was remarkably unhelpful of her. Though she supposes she shouldn't be surprised at this point. It's not like her head has been remarkably helpful with regards to being attracted to him up until this point. Why should it be helpful now?
I'll try that.
His voice is low and a little bit gravelly, and Arya gulps.
Good.
He nods. And fuck it. If she's going to be confused, she might as well be really confused, right? She reaches up and tugs at his collar, pulling him down and kisses him. And she forgets that this is a dream, because everything about it is real. The warmth of his lips against hers, the pine scent that he never seems to be without, even the taste of his breath as he nudges her lips open with his tongue. And it's in her mouth, caressing her tongue and making her legs feel like jelly. She pulls her arms around his neck, standing on the tips of her toes, her chest against his, and he drops the bat he'd been holding and grabs her hips, lifting her so she has to wrap her legs around his waist. And now she's not pulling his head down to meet her. She's hunched over him, all too aware of his stomach between her legs, as she holds his face and he walks backwards so that he's leaning against the dugout, squeezing her ass and breathing heavily through his nose.
I'm still confused, she whispers to him between kisses.
I can tell, he says dryly.
I am.
Yep.
Shut up, I mean it.
I know you do. He breaks the kiss and looks at her seriously. It's the same as it was before, really.
What do you mean?
She asks quickly, and slowly he sets her down and sighs. Look, it's... He reaches up and takes off his baseball cap, running his hands through his hair, then putting it back on in a motion so fast, so natural, that Arya almost smiles.
It's the emotional and the physical, right? Like, the physical lined up, always. She blushes, thinking of their sex dreams. It's the emotional that didn't. So the physical makes sense. That's always been easy, and still is. It's the other bit that's, yeah. Arya chews on her lip and looks down at her hands. He reaches over and cups her chin, and there's a gentleness in his eyes that she's not expecting. For what it's worth, I've gotten really good at compartmentalizing that, he whispers. I know you handle them separately. It's, yeah. That almost makes me feel worse, she mumbles, and he hugs her tightly. Don't. Focus on the other stuff. This part isn't broken. Isn't it? If the emotional and the physical don't line up? He frowns slightly, then looks away, over her shoulder, thinking. I suppose. Yeah, I suppose, but... He looks back down at her. You just kissed me. Because you wanted to. Because you felt like it. Because you figured it'd be fine, right? Yes. So, it's a kiss. It doesn't have to necessarily be a full-blown I'm-in-love-with-you kiss or anything. Her stomach ties itself into 67 different knots, and her breath catches in her throat. Sometimes people screw around for fun. If that's what this is right now, it's what it is. If you can't do that right now, if you need to try and put them together, that's fine. But if you can compartmentalize them, and you shouldn't feel bad doing that, then I can too. He watches her closely, and she has that feeling again, like he's holding his breath, waiting for her to turn away from him. Does he really think he's so worthless that I do that so easily? She wonders. She stands on the tip of her toes and kisses him again. And when his lips open against hers and his tongue sneaks between them, she almost feels calm. They win in extra innings at Salt Pans, and Arya's heart is in her throat the entire time, because they end up having to stick Weasel in as relief, and Weasel's round face is so determined as she strikes out hitter after hitter, and it's almost as much Weasel's victory as anyone else's. The girl is purely ecstatic, and she and Arya spend most of the bus ride back running through a play-by-play of her pitches, of how each throw felt, of her frame of mind as she threw, and Arya's never felt prouder because Weasel's face is positively alight. They arrive back at the university well past midnight, and Gendry texts her, telling her to come by Luke and Jack's where they're hosting a party that half the school seems to be at. But her feet take her back to her dorm, where Beth is already asleep, and her bed is soft and warm and waiting for her. The next day, she spends tearing her hair out over advanced quantometrics when her phone buzzes. Gendry Waters. I'm meeting with the Trout's manager today. She frowns and stares at the words on the screen for a moment before replying. Arya. You'll be fine. Stay calm. They'll want you. I know it. Gendry. Yeah, I mean, that's what I keep telling myself. But, yeah. Arya. Stop assuming that people won't want you. It's not healthy. Gendry. I know. Still, I mean, it's very possible they won't, right? Like, they might not need a second baseman. Arya. Like you couldn't play shortstop, or third, or first, or fuck it, you could totally play outfield. Gendry. Yeah, I just wish this was all over and I knew, you know? Arya. I can imagine. It'll be over soon enough, though. And that's what matters. Gendry. Right. Gendry. Right. Gendry. Okay, I'm heading over. Wish me luck. Arya. You don't need it, but good luck. She puts her phone back down. She's not nervous for him. She does genuinely believe he'll be recruited. She can't fathom a team not wanting someone with Gendry's stats. Mine are just as good, but I'm not going to be recruited.
She could be. She really could be. She would make a great pitcher anywhere in the league. And everyone knows you need to get pitchers young before they blow their arms. But she chews her lip. It's not a safe career path. It's not where the money is. Even if she did it, she'd be done in a few years and wouldn't be set for life. Even with a starting contract, Gendry would make twice what she would just because he was a guy playing baseball and she's a girl playing softball. The unfairness of it all hits her in the gut and she turns back to her homework. She could be happy for Gendry and supportive too. And besides, depending on how it went, they were soulmates after all. If he got a good... No, she wasn't supposed to be jumping ahead like that and thinking about how they would finance their life. That if he could live his dreams, he'd make enough for her to live hers as well. She needs to prepare for her fucking finals. And she puts her AQ homework away and tugs out her Bravosi flashcards because she has her oral exam the next day and needs to spend the evening making sure she has the greater themes of The Bloody Hand, and falls asleep over her notes, waking up only when her phone is buzzing next to her with a message from Lyanna asking if she's going to breakfast before class. Stress washes over Arya, washes over her like nothing she's felt all semester. They have afternoon practice and Syria is putting Weasel through her paces because after her performance at Saltpans, they've decided to start her against Brightwater Keep. And only by working her hard can they keep the look of panic off of her face. After practice, she goes straight to the library, where she does problem after problem for Econ, reviews different theories and theorems for AQ, and wonders what on earth made her like quantitative reasoning to begin with. Why couldn't she have liked literature and poetry like Sansa? Arya hadn't heard from Sansa since just after her trip to Winterfell. But in the brief moments she sees Ned in the dining halls, he looks happier than she's seen him in months, and she hopes that it carries over to her sister. She edits another draft of her Bravosi paper, goes back and corrects her midterm for Econ, which everyone had bombed, and spends hours talking through problems with Shireen until she drops into her bed, later and later every night, even though she should be going to bed early because they have a game on Saturday. And even if she's not pitching it, she should still be rested. Because what if Weasel has a meltdown and they end up needing her? Even her dreams aren't calm. The baseball diamond seems to roil and becomes less a diamond and more a graph that seems unsure as to whether or not it's an AQ field or a series of bell curves for Econ. And to make matters worse, she knows that Gendry is stressed as well, and that he runs around the bell curves as much for her own entertainment as for his own need to let off some of his nervousness. Because no matter what Arya tells him, it's scary for him. It's always so scary for him. She realizes, being afraid that someone new will turn him away. And no matter how many times she tells him that it will all be well, it won't matter. The dreams aren't relaxing. And they're hardly productive for her figuring everything out. And the only way they settle is if he comes over and kisses her and takes her breath away, pulling her close, his hands huge and warm as they cup her face, holding her there until nothing in the world is solid anymore. And she wakes up with a jolt, wishing that finals were over and that she could find time to actually kiss Gendry. It's Beth. Mild, gentle, kind, quiet Beth, who sends Arya to bed the night before the game against the Crag. She takes Arya's computer away and puts it under her own pillow so that Arya can't touch it until after the game, and even threatens to take her phone away if she tries working on reviewing her econ on it. Arya lies back with her heart thudding, wondering how long it'll take her to fall asleep, given how late she's been going to bed these days, and... after half an hour of tossing and turning, she digs out a sleeping pill and downs it. It seems to have no effect, and she wonders if she's immune as she stares at the yellowish light that the street lamps outside cast up onto the ceiling of her room. She tries not to panic. She remembers something from the human emotion class she took a few semesters before about how panic and the will to make yourself sleep keeps you awake. And she tries to think of something else. Anything else. Something calming and stupid, like how soft Nymeria's stomach is, or how she wonders what Bran is doing, or if John is all right. But even thinking of home and family won't calm her, and she feels her heart thumping in her chest as if she's been sprinting full out. That's when Gendry climbs onto the bed next to her and nuzzles into her neck. "What are you doing here? Beth's asleep," Arya hisses. "So are you," he replies, and he kisses her slowly, deeply, his hands coming to rest at the top of her ribcage as she twists on her side to make room for him on the bed. She sits up for a moment and sees that Beth's bed has conveniently vanished and that the room isn't so much her dorm room as one of the hotel rooms she'd stayed in for one game or another. And the bed isn't her narrow, extra-long twin bed, but a wide bed, wider than the room, than the sea, and it's just her and Gendry in it. She takes a shaky breath, and her mind is still moving a mile a minute, but now it's full of different things, different questions, different fears and nervousness. Because Gendry's in her dreams, and they aren't at their field. They're in her bed together, and his lips are right there. He's watching her now, watching her and waiting, his face completely blank, and he says he can compartmentalize it while she figures it out. He says he can. She drags his lips to hers, and he moans, and his tongue entwines itself with hers before he moves, before he drops his head to her neck, to her collarbone, down, down, kissing between her breasts. And she runs her fingers through his hair as he sucks on the skin above her sternum. "Don't stop," she whispers to him, and perversely, he does. He pulls away from her and looks at her, and she can't tell if it's because the room is dark or because it's a dream, but his eyes are darker than usual. "Arya," he whispers, "do you?" He doesn't finish the question, and she feels suddenly very warm, and her heart is beating as fast as a hummingbird's. It was different, somehow, now that they aren't, or rather, now that she knows that he's, that they're. But it's also not different. Not different, because she feels hot and breathless, looking down at him, and all she can think about is how she wants his lips on her, wherever he wants to put them, and she tugs her t-shirt off. He smiles as his lips wrap around her nipples, as his hands drop from her shoulder blades to her hips, and one of them snakes between her legs and hooks through the bottom of her underpants and draws them down her legs, leaving her completely naked. She lets him tilt her back so that she's lying flat on her back on the bed, one hand between her legs, while he sucks on her nipple, and she doesn't have to think about anything at all. Can't think about anything but him, because how could she? How could she think of anything else while he's touching her? She reaches her hands up and arches her back so that her breasts rise higher, and he switches to the other, his fingers lazily skirting the top of her slit, and moans because he's not there yet, not touching her where she wants him to, but he's going to soon. She can feel it. His fingers trace her outer labia, and she makes a mewling sound she hopes she would never make in real life. And she feels him grinning into her tit, and he begins to kiss his way up to the top of her breast, and to her neck, to her lips. And when his mouth's against hers, she wraps her arms around his neck, wraps her legs around his hips, and clings to him, relishing that he's there in her arms, that he's there with her, even if it's a dream, because with them, dreams are reality too. She uses her feet to nudge his sweatpants down over his butt and off his legs, and he moans as she rubs her cunt along his shaft and as she reaches down between them and takes his cock in hand, pumping it once or twice, before she settles it at her entrance and he shoves inside her and she gasps his name. He stills for a moment and grins down at her. "What is it?" she whispers, breathless. But he doesn't reply. He just kisses her and pulls his hips away from hers and pushes back in. "Kendry," she says, halfway between a moan and an exasperated sigh.
"I like hearing you say my name," he whispers. "I like that you know it's me, that we're here together, and that this..."
He presses into her again, and his eyelids flutter slightly.
"This is us. This is right. This is how it should be."
He's right, but something still catches at her heart. Some lingering fear, some shadow of doubt that it won't be somehow, that her stupid heart and her stupid head won't line up, and if she sees him in person, she'll be upset and sad and hurt again, and this feeling of him inside her will fade away, or that he'll do something and strike out and everything will break irreparably. But that's a thought for later, not a thought for now. Now she is compartmentalizing. She props herself up on her elbows and kisses him, his neck, his lips, his cheek, his chin, whatever she can reach, as he thrusts and thrusts, and she feels her breath growing shorter and her heart pumping faster. She slips her fingers down between them to rest on her clit, and she circles lightly, circles in time with his movements, and soon, too soon, far sooner than she expected, much sooner than she wanted, she's choking out his name again as she comes harder than she ever had before in their dreams, falling back against the pillows and letting her cunt convulse around him as he continues to rock in and out of her until he shudders, climaxes, and collapses on top of her. She feels like she's glowing, feels like she's radiating warmth because her dream had been so hot when she goes into the locker rooms the next day. And when she sits down next to Weasel, who's already fully dressed and looking a little sick, the warmth doesn't fade. "You ready?" she asks. Weasel doesn't move, but she does swallow very obviously. "You can do this," Arya says, reaching over and rubbing between the other girl's shoulder blades. "You've done it 100 times before." "And I've lost," Weasel says. "I lose, Arya, when we can't lose. I lost at White Harbor. I lost at..." "You won for us at Salt Pans," Arya says fiercely. "You're going to win today. I know it. Here, think of it this way. Every ounce of nerves you're feeling right now..." Weasel lets out an unintentional whimper, and Arya rubs her back again. "Every single one. Ball them up really tight, put them in a soft ball, and throw them away as hard as you can." Weasel manages an expression of derision, and Arya laughs. "Alternatively, if you think you're nervous now, channel all that into making me as nervous as possible on Wednesday."
"What's Wednesday?" Weasel asks dumbly.
"I have 2 finals, and if we win, I'll be pitching finals too." Arya thinks about it for a moment and lets out a panicked laugh. "Yeah, make me as nervous as possible, please. I could do with more stress."
"You don't seem stressed right now," Weasel says, her eyebrows knitted together in concern. "You seem happy right now."
Arya thinks back to Gendry lying on top of her, laughing as he kissed his way up and down her face, while she held his ass in place so that he couldn't pull his cock out of her just yet, and she suppresses a smile.
"I had a good dream last night."
"Did you see your soulmate's face?" Weasel asks excitedly. Arya blinks in surprise before realizing she hadn't told anyone on the team yet.
"I've known who he was for a while now," she says slowly. I think him knocking a foul ball into my head helped a fair amount."
It was easier to use that as an excuse than the truth. Weasel claps her hands delightedly and calls out, "Guys, she knows!"
"Finally," calls Lyanna. "We were wondering what the poor boy would try next."
"Wait, you all knew?" Arya asks, aghast.
"Yeah, I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? The way you two spend time together," Elia says gently. "It's not very friend-like, nor is it particularly we are having sex in secret-like. It's something else entirely. Pretty obvious if you know what to look for. You know, him trailing after you at parties or trying not to dance together at clubs. That sort of stuff." She claps Arya on the shoulder, and Arya looks at her grumpily.
Oh, don't look that way, says Shireen cheerfully. We were pulling for you, and apparently the baseball team got it out of him when he was drunk freshman year. Not your name, just enough about you to put the pieces together when you got to campus.
He never told me that, Arya mutters, not sure how annoyed she is, or how annoyed she should be.
I don't know if he remembers it, says Joy mildly. She's pulling her curls up into a tight ponytail and weaving it through the hole at the back of her cap.
He was really quite shit-faced. He hasn't drunk that much since, I don't think. Though that might be for other reasons.
He doesn't drink, Arya says. Only beer because it doesn't get him drunk.
I wish I didn't get drunk off beer, sighs Cynthia, and the team laughs.
She's trying not to feel upset, trying not to feel angry because, gods, everyone had known but her. Every single person. Bran and Jon had probably guessed it. Shit, Ned had probably told Sansa. Everyone in her life had known. Even her mother had intuited it just from one conversation, and this was why things were messed up. This, right here. This because everyone had known, but she hadn't, and Gendry hadn't told her. He just let her go around and... She flushes and realizes she's not really listening to what Myrcella is saying.
All right, Revella calls. Let's get this show on the road.
And Arya pushes it all away. Later. She'll think about this later, when she has time. After finals or something.
Arya's heart is in her throat as she watches Weasel take the mound. Weasel looks so small suddenly. So young, and her nervousness is palpable. The first pitch is a hit, and one of Brightwater's runners gets to first, and Arya groans, because she knows that will shake Weasel's confidence.
You can do this, she mutters. You can. You've done this before. You can do it again.
Weasel seems to have thought the same thing, because she strikes out the next three hitters with what seems like relative ease. And when she comes back to the dugout, she almost smiles as the team pats her on the back, and she comes to sit between Arya and Sirio. Arya hands her a water bottle, and she downs half of it and doesn't say anything. Arya doesn't either. She doesn't want to break her concentration. Apart from that first hit, Weasel pitches five perfect innings, and they score twice before they send in Rosamund to replace her. And when she sinks onto the bench, she's grinning madly and says to Arya, "It's not my fault if we lose."
"You are fantastic,"
Arya grins, and she throws her arm over Weasel's shoulder.
"If we lose, you and I get to beat everyone up for ruining our chances, all right?"
"Right." It's not something they have to worry about at all. They win 4-1, and Arya spends at least half an hour dancing around the field with everyone else before they go back into the locker rooms and proceed to relive the highlights of the game loudly until Revella blows her whistle and everyone quiets down.
"Great game, everyone," says Revella as they all settle down onto their benches. Some of them only half-dressed, and Myrcella wrapped only in a towel.
"That was..." And she raises a hand, a proud smile crossing her face.
"Amazing. And if we lose finals, I'll still be remarkably proud of you."
"We're not losing finals," says Joy, and they stamp their feet in agreement.
"Arya, you're pitching," Revella says, and Arya nods. No one looks surprised. It's been obvious that's been the goal the whole time. "Rosamund, how's your arm in case we need relief?"
Rosamund shrugs and nods.
"Good. No practice tomorrow, but Monday and Tuesday we're going for 3 hours a night. I know some of you have finals. If you're worried about them, come talk to me."
Four girls are already standing and going to talk to Revella, so Arya bites back her panic and pulls out her phone to begin to email her family and tell them the news. When she's fired it off, she looks up and sees Sirio standing over her.
"You're as quiet as a cat, you are," she mutters, tucking her phone away.
"Lots of practice," he responds, shrugging. "How are you feeling?" She considers.
"Nervous. More about finals than this."
Sirio nods. You and I will work, but I don't think we'll want the full 3 hours Monday and Tuesday. How does an hour and a half sound? Arya sighs in relief. I have 2 finals on Wednesday as well, so that sounds perfect. 1 hour a night, Sirio says, and be sure to rest. Arya nods, and her phone buzzes in her pocket.
Gendry Waters. We lost. I'm about to talk to a scout. How'd yours go?
The news seems to have hit most of them at the same time, because she hears Myrcella calling out, "The boys lost!" And a wave of groans fill the room.
Arya Stark. We won. I'm pitching finals on Wednesday, and I have 2 finals on Wednesday. Cue panicked laughter.
When she gets out of the shower, she has 3 text messages from Gendry.
Gendry. You'll be great. In all of them. I'm not even worried about you. Gendry. And if you're worried about finals, we'll play a lot this week. It'll probably calm me down some as well.